So the work I'm presenting was done at Veritas with my colleague, Dr. Mehta Bhatnagar. Now, the reason that we decided to look into how enterprise data backups fail is because of the state of backup today. So if you look in the news, backup rarely comes up. What happened? Yeah, so if you look in the news, backup... I can keep going. All right, so if you look in the news, backup rarely comes up for good reason. It's usually tied to some disaster. I just scoured Google in preparation for this talk, and the two news stories that came up was, one of us was for 123reg, which is the largest UK web hosting company. During routine IT maintenance, they ended up erasing a lot of their customers' data, which would be fine if they had a backup, which they didn't. This happened in April. They didn't release information as to how many customers were affected, but we have information that's around thousands. So the second story was about Salesforce. For those of you that don't know Salesforce, it's a cloud computing company. It provides services to other companies to interface with their customers and track sales, support tickets, and whatnot. So recently, one of their nodes went offline. Eventually, they brought it back online. They went back to their backups to restore any data that was missing. Turns out their backups were incomplete. They lost about 4 hours worth of data. That happened just last month. So if you look at business surveys, which, by the way, is the only thing we have to go by, these results should not be a surprise to anyone. So these business surveys usually interview CIOs and IT professionals. I'm going to mention two data points that pop out. One is that 27% of businesses mentioned having lost data due to backup errors. I expect this personally to be an underestimation, because you're going to have businesses either not realizing they lost data or they just don't want to admit it. Another data point is that 80% of businesses mentioned having serious trouble configuring their backup software. And so this is the landscape we saw, and we decided that what we need to do is have a more systematic study to understand why backups fail. So that's what we set out to do. Our study has three goals. The first one is to understand why is it the backups fail. The second one is to help to look into our data set to see if we can derive lessons to help resolve these backup errors. And the third goal is to proactively prevent backup errors from happening again in the future by using these lessons. And of course, you need data to do a study. Veritas is in an advantageous position to do that because they have net backup. It's an enterprise backup software product, and they can collect telemetry from their customers' installations. The way the telemetry program works is by having customers opt into it, and then every week their systems compile reports that contain statistics on runtime and configuration of the system, such as how many jobs ran, how many of them failed, how much data was transferred. So this way, we collected a data set of 775 million jobs from 20,000 installations across 3 years. So we have more than one job types in our data set. Of course, we have data backup jobs. So three out of four jobs are backup jobs. But we also have what we call data management jobs. So these are jobs that operate on already backed up data, like, for example, when you want to duplicate a backup archive to tertiary storage or to tape. And also if you want to retire old backup images to save space. We also have data recovery jobs. As you can see, there's not a lot of them. So these are rare events, but obviously they're very important. This is why we do backup. And so this is our data. I'm going to jump to the results right away. So the first thing we wanted to do is understand why is it the backups fail. And to back up one step, is this even really a problem? Are there enough backup errors? Turns out there are. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today. We did something pretty straightforward to the data. We took the jobs that we had. We partitioned it per month. And then we estimated the fraction of jobs that failed in a given month, or the monthly error rate that you see there. These are the results that we got. That's pretty bad. It's between 10 and 30%. So that's the first thing that pops out. The second thing that I want you to notice is the trend in the data. So in the first half of the data set, you'll see that there's higher error rates, there's more variation. I can explain why that happens. So we start collecting data with the first alpha release of a specific backup version that allows us to collect the telemetry we want. At that point, the customer systems that contribute data to us is what we call development systems. These are early adopters that test alpha and beta versions to check new features out and, you know, tell Veritas what they think about it. The product itself reached a stable state about a year and a bit later. At that point, the systems that are contributing data can be broken into test systems, which are short-lived systems. They're mainly used for configuration testing, according to what we're told. They're only running stable releases, though. And then the rest are, of course, production systems. They're long-lived. They're busy. 96% of our jobs come from that category of systems. And so you can see from the graph that as soon as the product is released in production, the error rate has less variation, and it starts plateauing. But even that plateau is about around 9%. Right? Still, 1 out of 10 jobs fail in a given month. Okay, so I started out with bad news. I'm going to try to fix that. So we find that the errors are not very diverse, though. Now, initially, this was not obvious to us, because when we looked at the data set, we found that jobs returned about 333 distinct error codes. This is admittedly better than what it could be. There's about 1,200 error codes documented for net backup. But one thing that is really bad is that if you look at which kinds of systems these errors occur, 59 of them happen only in the production systems. And these are errors like communication errors or, for example, a software component was not reachable, things that you would expect would have been exposed at a testing environment. But I promised good news. So they come when you look at the distribution of job errors based on error code. So this is what we did here. We ranked error codes based on their frequency. And what we plot here on the y-axis is the fraction of job errors based on the top and most frequent error codes. So if you focus on the gray line, which is just the production systems, which is what I'm going to be focusing for the rest of the talk, 64% of errors are due to 5 error codes. These are the same 5 error codes across all systems. And I said I would tell you why backups fail. Well, I have a top 5. So number 5 is that the backup window was just too short. So the administrator needs to tell sort of the backup software what times of the week to back up. These are pretty long backup windows. But whenever there's jobs that didn't fit in there, they will return that error and they will never be scheduled. The number 4 was the device was full, so the backup never actually took place. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Number 3 is due to tape. So, of course, a lot of users use tape libraries. And if there's no media available for the backup software to grab a tape and put the backup on, you get this error. Number 2 starts getting more interesting. It's because the file system block size, or the maximum file size, was reported the wrong way to the backup software. So when the tarball was constructed from the backup software and it was about to be committed, we realized that you can't fit that big a file in the file system. And number 1 is admittedly better than the rest of them, because at least it gives you some backed up data. So it's partial backups, and they're just because all the other files could not be backed up because their permissions were too restrictive. So the backup software couldn't access them. 1 in 4 jobs returned this error, by the way. Right, so I hope I have convinced you at this point that backup errors are common. So I want to dive into the next thing, which is look into the data set, see if we can do something about them. What are the characteristics? And the first thing is sort of expected. Configuration is to blame most of the time. The way we arrived at this conclusion is that we manually categorized error codes based on their cause. So we went through all those 333 error codes that occurred. We took the troubleshooting manual that is given to the administrators, and we grouped error codes in 3 categories based on the steps you need to take to resolve them. The first category is misconfigurations. What I call misconfigurations is basically errors that can be resolved by taking very specific steps. So they're very unambiguous, the process you need to follow. Change that parameter to something that is appropriate, or like that parameter might clash with that one. The other category is system errors. So these require the administrator to have some knowledge of their system, which hopefully they do. Like for example, they will tell you that a storage device was not reachable, so you need to do something about that. And finally, we have known fatal errors. These are not as bad because maybe they will report that an administrator killed the job, or that your license is about to expire in a couple months. But you're still going to get data backups. So 75.5% of errors are due to misconfigurations. There's about 22% that are due to system errors, and finally, there's a few non-fatal errors. But to tie this back to the top 5 I gave you before, all 5 of these errors can be resolved by going through configuration fixes in your system, either within the backup software or by changing, say, permissions of a file. So I guess the conclusion we have here is that we need to come up with better configuration validation tools or self-healing mechanisms, because when you look at the troubleshooting guides, it's pretty obvious as to how to resolve these errors. The second factor was job type. So the reason we decided to look into that as a factor is because when we looked at the error codes, 46% of them were specific to job type, either management jobs or backup jobs or recovery jobs. This is because they describe conditions where, for example, a specific parameter of a job was not set correctly. And we wanted to see if this translates to different error rates for different job types. Turns out it does. Management jobs failed by far the most. 1 in 3 fail. 1 in 10 backup jobs also fail, and 2% of recovery jobs also fail. So the message I guess we get out of this is that whatever error prevention mechanism you have, you need to take into account the job type that it tries to resolve the error of. And I'm not being more specific here because 2.9% recovery error seems small, but that might mean that you lose data every time. So it depends on what each one of these means to you. So the other thing is that job size also plays an important role. The reason that we arrived, the way that we arrived at this conclusion is that we took each system, we estimated the average job size in that system over its entire lifetime for each different job type, and then we grouped them into 3 groups. You have jobs that are less than 1 gigabyte in size, systems with jobs between 1 and 100 gigs, and then systems with large jobs, larger than 100 gigs. This is post-deduplication, by the way, so it's the actual bytes that were transferred to the storage. And what we have here are box plots that sort of show you the spread in terms of the job error rate across all these systems. The way to read these box plots is that the whiskers show you the minimum at the bottom and the max job error rate at the top. The box itself frames the 25th percentile and the 75th percentile, and the line in the middle is the median. So you can see if you focus on backup errors, for example, that as you go to systems with larger jobs, you should expect to see higher job rates. There's higher spread. Similarly for recovery jobs. So we arrive at the conclusion that systems with larger jobs encounter more errors until you look at the management jobs, and that's a little bit different. This is, I would say this is an artifact of the way that we cluster things into categories. There's a lot of systems that use management jobs, but not really to duplicate backup archives, mostly to delete and retire old backups. So these have basically zero size because they don't transfer any data. So the average size for the system goes down, and all of these systems are grouped in that small group. Even if you ignore this trend for management jobs, though, what we arrive at is that we should backup often to avoid large jobs. That could be one suggestion. Another one is to, if you have large backup archives, if you want to make sure you can recover from them, it might be a good idea to verify their integrity, which in a previous study we found never happens. So a final factor is complexity. Now, obviously, when you do a backup, you want to make sure you get a consistent backup. And consistency is a property of the application you're trying to back up. So there's different backup policies that enterprise backup softwares offer. So if you try to back up an Oracle database from the minute you start the backup to the minute you're done, some of the tables might be in an inconsistent state as transactions come in. So these policies will know what logs, for example, to back up so you can replay them when you restore the system. So as a result of this, the configuration parameters can differ by policy. And there's a lot of these policies. So here, every data point in this plot is a different backup policy offered by NetBackup. There's about 30 of them. And what we try to see is if error diversity is affected by that. So we sorted them on the x-axis based on the number of parameters that are sort of user-facing, so the user can configure them. And then on the y-axis, we went through all the systems that deployed jobs under those policies, and we saw how many different error codes do you see. And what you can see is clearly there's a trend that as you increase policy parameters, you should expect to see more error codes. So the lesson is pretty obvious, like you should design and use simpler backup policies with regard to the user-facing parameters. So I'm going to state those factors. There's more in the paper. I want to jump to the last part of the talk, which is preventing backup errors using this knowledge. So when I say preventing, what we tried to do initially is error prediction. I mean, if we don't have a good way to validate configurations, at least we should be able to tell administrators, this is what's going to happen in the future. You might want to take a look at that error code. So the first thought we had is go through these weekly reports we have, construct time series for systems, and then do some time series forecasting to see when you should expect to see another error in the future. Turns out that's not good enough. Our historical data is insufficient to do this. The main reason we elaborate more in the paper on this is that there's high variability in inter-arrival times of different error codes. But we do have other factors that we looked at. Like we know already that job type and job size are linked to error rate. We know that policy complexity is linked to error diversity. We have other factors in the paper. But what we were thinking is, if you look at all these study factors, can you construct a prediction model that has higher accuracy than this? So we took a learning approach. We used random forests. Random forests are very convenient for this problem. They're groups of decision trees. They're trained independently on random subsets of the data. And as a result, they're fairly resistant to overfitting, to bias, and to correlations between features. And what we did is generate a separate model, separate forest, for each one of the error codes that we have across all our systems. So this is a fairly complicated plot, and I'll walk you through it. Usually when you have a prediction model and you want to evaluate it, you take the true positive rate, the false positive rate. Well, when it comes to random forests, they'll give you a prediction for whatever condition you put in, and also a score of the confidence they have on that prediction. So then you choose a threshold, which is the selectivity of your model, and you say that I'm going to accept predictions that are above that threshold. And you can estimate the performance of the model by tuning that threshold and seeing how it performs across it. So that's how you construct this plot, which is called the rock curve. And as you move towards the right, you become sort of more gullible, if you will. You are willing to accept more things as true positives, and of course you get more false positives. So where you want to be, obviously, is the upper left corner. High true positive rates, very low false positive rates. And now it's time to read the plot. So if you look at the red line, we only used historical data to train our model. And in this case, you can get about 60% true positive rate, about 8% false positive rate. I mean, that's good enough, but you wouldn't trust it completely. Then when we threw in study factors, we were able to boost that up by 19% without doing anything fancy, by the way, just throwing the data in. And we got about 6% false positive rate. This is pretty representative of the models that we had for other error codes. And actually, 44% of the models would rank the study factors as the top feature instead of in terms of deciding what the prediction is going to look like. Specifically, the ones that ended up to be the top two features were the number of jobs in the backup system and the policy complexity can be used to get good predictions. All right, so I threw a lot of data at you. Where do we go from here? We've identified four possible avenues in the paper. The first one is error prediction. I mean, we tried this, but we tried to do this across all the systems in our data set. We believe that if you look at individual systems and their quirks, you might be able to come up with better models that have better accuracy. Another thing is configuration automation. The study that we did last year, we found that a lot of administrators don't touch most of the parameters. And I mean, I can't blame them because I went through the 1200 error code manual, and I don't remember most of the dependencies myself. So it might be good to have sort of tools to automate this process. Another thing is configuration validation. There's been a lot of work in the literature on configuration validation, but we're advocating a more application-specific approach. Now, this information, like the troubleshooting information that I mentioned, is available out there for everyone. If we could encode all of these dependencies between error codes in a tool, I think it would be really interesting. And the final thing, work reduction. So I mentioned one of the most popular errors is that despite the fact that usually when you set a backup window, when administrators set a backup window, they pick 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. to run all their backups. And despite having a 12-hour window, all their backups can't fit into that. So clearly we're doing something wrong, or we're just generating a lot of data. So we need to look into approaches to reduce the amount of data that we're either backing up or be smarter about the amount of I/O that needs to be done to do that. All right, and with that, I'm going to conclude and open the floor to questions. Thank you.
Hi, it's Philip Chelan from EMC. I want to thank you for the paper. I firmly believe that research into backups is the most exciting area of research.
Wow, okay.
I work in that myself. So you had an early slide showing 9% of backups had failures. Was that of backups or of systems?
Backups, backup jobs. When it comes to systems, mm-hmm. for production systems specifically, the error rate is 15.2%, the average across all systems that we have.
So you're saying that it wasn't highly correlated to a system, it was like very spread across the system.
Yeah, because there's a long tail distribution of like some systems running very many jobs and having very low error rate. I assume they have better administrators or something.
Yeah, kind of related to that, you talked about job failures and showing that big jobs failed more often. Yeah. I was kind of wondering if you normalized that by gigabyte, how would it work out, right? Because a big job just has more data that could fail versus a small job, which is kind of easier to get done.
We haven't done that, okay. But that's a great idea.
All right. You talked about the file permission error situation. Was this a case where it worked for a while and then some user changed permissions and then suddenly failed, or was misconfigured from the beginning of time?
I wish I could answer that question. The problem is that we have aggregates, mm-hmm. so I can't really answer that.
But if you had a report daily or weekly from the system, you would see...
Weekly.
Okay, so 1 week it works, 1 week it doesn't work, maybe.
The problem is that you can't really... The weekly data is collected across all systems. Mm-hmm. So I know that for all the clients, this many jobs collected this much data. So I can't really track a job over time and say, this is the point where it started failing with that error.
So you had multiple clients per system,
yeah.
you aggregated over clients,
yes.
and you can't really separate them and track them over time.
Yeah.
Okay. You talked about making, breaking down the file, the size of the backups, because the big ones were failing more. Just curious of your opinion, is that really possible? If you have a big Oracle database and you got to back it up,
right.
can you break it into small pieces? So, maybe not.
Okay, so I feel like I'm plugging the earlier work now, but so what we found is that in the earlier paper was that the frequency with which full backups are happening in most systems is increasing based on how much data they want to back up. The reason for this, they have to back up, I mean. The reason for this is that usually after a full backup happens, it gets duplicated globally. So it's really an incremental backup, just easier to manage. And so what they tend to do is back up their Oracle database many times, but only back up the new data. That's the only thing you store.
And I'll ask just one final question, since someone else has a question. You talked about making configurations simpler, right? That the complex configurations failed more often. They probably created a complex configuration. They had a reason for it, right? There was some
yes.
complicated policy. We want this file backed up every hour, this one every week, and there's these permissions, and the backup window is 4 hours here and 12 hours there.
Yep.
Is it practical to make it simpler?
Well, okay, again, this links to, I guess, the previous work, that a lot of these parameters are never actually tuned by the administrators. What we found is that the defaults are just left as they are. No one touches that. So that's why I believe it might be possible to slim down okay. how many things you expose to the user.
Right, thank you.
Yeah.
Peter, if I can jump in just ahead of you,
yeah.
because I had actually a question on that last point that he made,
okay.
which was if you have a lot, on slide 14, if you want to jump to that, you said that if you had more parameters, you had more job error codes, I believe. And the question is, yes, if you add a new parameter, you're likely to tweak some new code. The
yes.
question is, what is the correlation with the overall number of errors? Do you actually do you get lots of jobs that have errors because you have lots of parameters, or is it just that you see different errors because you are doing more variety of things?
You don't get more errors, no. There was no correlation with that.
Okay.
So we definitely.
So it's really not a reason not to have more parameters.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I look at it from the sense that do you really want to be dealing with more error codes? Not more errors, though. Yeah.
Peter Desnoyers, Northeastern. One thing that I did see from this, and I guess this is something, you know, to contrast with Phil's hot storage talk, is performance really does seem to be important for backup window,
yeah.
You know, issues that. A vast amount of this pain would go away if the backups actually ran a good bit quicker. So I don't know how much of that is doable and how much of that is just running things full throttle with today's technologies.
So again, I feel like I'm plugging my own research. So we had an approach at SOSP, which is piggybacking on other things that are happening. So if you want to do multiple things over the same data, we have a framework where you can register interest, and it will tell you what's cached at any point in time. You reorder what is available in the cache, and then, you know, you just don't have to do all that I/O.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't know what else you can do other than running it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you.